Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Editing Aloud. In the studio with me today, I have some of the premier journalists in the TESOL Black Star stable. Lukhanya, first thing we have to speak about is the Rand, and what we've seen over the past week or so, and I think today it's down over 2% already. Just say, take on this emerging market crisis, and I mean centrally around Turkey and how the contagion is affecting us.
It's been an interesting story, isn't it, Ron? Yeah. When you look at our front page today, got these guys standing here, Turkish guys with their dollars, being told by their president to go sell the dollar and the euro as an act of patriotism.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, that's not how financial markets work.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the Rand, it sort of shows like we know we don't really exist in a vacuum here. The Rand has been actually been stable for a while. And then I think we woke up on Monday, like, saying it was up, down, like, all 10% in. Which is understandable. This kind of thing breaks at 3 in the morning. Like, I don't think there are many Rand traders around.
Yeah.
I think by the end of the day, we were probably down only 1%.
Yeah.
And then I think, as you say, we're down 2% today. We were actually up yesterday because Turkey was up like something like 6% yesterday. So it's from that, it's quite clear that this is not a Rand story as such. Maybe we're just getting caught up in this bigger story. And I know that Rand being one of the most liquid currencies in the world relative to its economy. So somehow it gets caught up in that because it becomes the easy currency to sell because maybe you can't necessarily get out of Argentina or whatever, so you're trying to keep your emerging market holdings within respectable levels, then the Rand is always the easy victim in some ways.
So what does this mean, Stephen, just for inflation and I guess interest rates and so on? That is in a country that is struggling to grow above 1%.
Well, I hope that we're not going to get the Reserve Bank reacting in the way that, I mean, Chris Stulz did all those years ago and trying to defend the currency through interest rates. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, obviously, there's always going to be a direct relationship between interest rates and inflation, and although obviously lags. But I think, It's going to be a tough time.
Yeah.
I hope they're not going to raise interest rates.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I think the impact. Maybe you might see it more in terms of companies. Suppose consumers in terms of like simple things like petrol price.
Yeah.
And obviously like so retailers where we import stuff and sell on. I mean the market, as you said, is quite a weak market.
Yeah.
So they can't necessarily pass on those costs.
Mm.
So. So like it'd probably be a bad time maybe if we are for retailers and people who drive cars. But other than as far as rates are concerned, I mean I think Daniel Minella, the deputy governor of the Reserve Bank, has already come out and said we're not gonna respond to daily
fluctuations
in the currency. We only respond if it's sustained and it's got like second round effects on actually inflation going forward. So I can't see them actually reacting in the short term.
It's interesting those companies that were complaining about a strong rand. We're keeping very quiet at the moment. I think it was almost a wonderful excuse for them to underperform, and now they don't have that excuse. So, but come out. I mean, if you like a weak rand, say so. You know.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick. I mean, this all muddies the whole fiscal policy. We talked about last week about bailouts to our SOEs and so on. In this context, how does this South African government plan? I mean, on a few our fiscal future of the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's talk of the 30,000 job cuts. There's a 59 billion rand bailout. I see talk here in another publication of a sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah.
So obviously, there's a big call for resources.
Mm.
You know, and Eskom, big problems there. Not able to raise the money on the markets as they would have liked.
Yeah.
Sunroll, again, you know, Sunroll is meant to be self-financing. So we seem to be looking at a situation where a lot of people are, if you like, looking to Pretoria for some sort of help, stroke, bailout.
Mm.
Do we have the money for all of this? I'm not sure we do. You know, obviously the key to a lot of it is sustainability.
Mm.
You know, how can Eskom sustain itself? I saw a story today that the politicians are going to have to draw a line in the sand in respect to the municipalities.
Yeah.
And politicians are going to have to tell people, listen guys, you're going to have to pay for this stuff, right? If Eskom is to be self-sustaining, Sunroll, well look, Sunroll seems to be a lost cause and well not Sunroll as such, but the whole sort of e-toll project.
That model.
I mean, that seems to be, yeah, that seems to be a lost cause. And certainly with an election looming, the temptation to ditch it with some fanfare would be quite alluring, I would think. But obviously a lot of drawdown on the fiscus.
Yeah.
And certainly we've got to look at making our entities or getting in a way that they that they're self-funding, that they're self-sustaining.
Yeah.
The bailout culture, it's got to end somewhere, one would think. Yeah.
I mean, Patrick mentioned some interesting things.
Yeah.
Now look at all this talk about all this money, this new stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't even here like 6 months ago. It was only 6 months ago we were getting like an austerity budget, no? where we were cutting costs, cutting spending,
yes,
when we were raising taxes.
Yeah.
And now suddenly we like this new money for stimulus.
It's
all very confusing.
Politics next year, right? It's all based on that. I mean, Alan, Stephen spoke about the weaker rand and how people should be like, it's always the mining sector as a whole benefits from it. But we're seeing, I mean, the headlines are pretty terrible, like Goldfields yesterday. Last week was Impala Platinum. I'm sure London will come as well. What's the state of the mining sector? And give us a bit of an update with regards to the goldfields being the big news.
Look, just firstly on Stephen's point with the rand where it is, companies like the gold companies, platinum, iron ore, they're all benefiting from the weaker rand.
Mm.
So that's good. Mm. But it is a short-term thing that's just coming now. There's been longer-term damage to this industry.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, we've seen a lot of job cuts coming through in the past few months.
Mm.
Goldfields the most recent, but I think that's more self-inflicted than any commodity kind of pricing.
It's a company-specific issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas Impala Platinum, it's a range of issues, including a weak platinum price, a strong rand,
yeah,
combined with strikes, combined with just an inability to cope with very quickly rising costs,
yeah,
against a very flat metal price.
Mm.
And they're being pushed into a position now where that's 13,000 jobs,
yeah,
coming out of their company. Goldfields, as you said, is a company-specific issue. They've had South Deep since 2006.
Yeah.
They've spent 32 billion rand. And the last I looked, their market capitalization has dropped just below that 32 billion. This morning.
Yeah.
So the share price has taken quite a hiding on the news of yesterday.
Yeah.
But essentially they're laying off about between 25% and 30% of their workforce at South Deep, which is their last mine in South Africa. And essentially they've just been unable to get this mine to operate and make profit.
Yeah.
And they've burned through something like 4 billion rand in 5 years. It's not good.
Yeah. So how do you take an economy performing like this into polls? And how, we talk about stimulus packages. How does Ramaphosa go next year's polls and take this economy? And how does the ANC, per se, go forward
in this position? I think probably someone like Patrick is more qualified than me on the politics of the thing, but let me try and give it a go.
Mm.
I mean, I suppose like in the context of party politics, maybe you can argue that is Ramaphosa, despite all his limitations, they're not made by him. I don't think anybody blames him personally. And then secondly, you look at all this, the opposition. I mean, they're not really doing great. I mean, the AFF, who knows what they're up to? The DA is always having fights about his own internal issues, whether it's Delil, whether it's race, whether it's BEE.
Mm.
I mean, it's not like there's big competition out there for those votes. I suppose maybe the danger, maybe some ANC people become, I don't know, complacent, stay at home, don't go to the polls. But in some ways, some people might think maybe we need to get things going. We need to strengthen Ramaphosa by giving him a strong mandate.
Mm.
So maybe you might get people who might vote for the DA instead, who might think...
Patrick, what do you think?
He's very skeptical.
Now, I mean, one talks about opposition and what sort of opposition the ANC might be facing. But, in an odd kind of way, Cyril's got more than enough opposition within the ANC itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the real worry for investors and analysts looking at the South African situation. The sounds coming from Cyril Ramaphosa, yes, they sound good and one wants to trust him.
Mm.
But there's that nagging feeling. Is he carrying the party with him?
Mm.
Is he being set up to fail?
Mm.
God forbid that there are forces within the ANC, within the government, who are, as it were, sort of giving him enough rope,
yeah.
And or is he going to be judged by possibly the election results next year. Will that be the pretext for getting rid of him? Mm. You know, as we'll maybe talk later in the show about the NPA and Sean Abrams, and, you know, step by step by step by step, Ramaphosa does seem to be doing the cleanup.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, though, whether investors are convinced that Ramaphosa's in for the long haul, and certainly there's tendencies in the ANC that seem very opposed to what Ramaphosa's doing, and who have a different sort of view of what the fiscus is for.
Mm.
And, you know, as you see in Turkey, you know, once you get that sort of nationalist type political fervor, the sort of good economics goes out the window.
I mean, this whole idea of a sovereign wealth fund, like, where is that from? From what is this again? I mean, the last time I think we were in a surplus, 2008. Where is this? Is this all part of the politics that the populism that he has somehow managed within his party? There's talk of sovereign wealth funds and stimulus packages. Yeah?
Well, you need some wealth to gather in the first place. Yeah. I mean, obviously the most famous sovereign wealth fund in the world is the Norwegian one, and that's based on their oil wealth, and that's just to build it up for further generations, because they know they're not going to, it's not going to last forever, so they're making it a treasure chest. But as we don't have that, I mean, I suppose in an ideal world, mineral resources would have been that, but I mean, clearly, especially from what Alan says, that's not going to be the case, but maybe never in our lifetimes. I mean,
you talk about the Norwegian fund where they ring fence their oil revenues. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk about the South African royalties on minerals. Mm. It just goes straight into the fiscus and gets paid out. Mm. So it's not ring fenced in any kind of way that benefits the nation.
Yeah.
It's, you know, given the way the government squanders money and misappropriates it, we really have lost an opportunity, much to Stephen's point.
Mm. And the fiscus is so stretched now, they need those royalties. I'm sure they can't, okay, we can take this out of the basket. There's nothing in there, nothing much going in there. Yeah. That's the state of the economy right now. Thanks for that. We'll see you after the break. And welcome back as we continue our show. We were talking about Ramaphosa and what it brought in and all this mining charter, some certainty that Gwede's new mining minister sort of brought and so on. So what is the state now, like going forward, about what happens to the gold fields and Lomas as well? What's the industry and the confidence within this important mining sector?
Well, firstly, we're going into a reporting season now for all the gold companies in the next 2 weeks. Yeah. So all the big companies are reporting either half year or full year financial numbers.
Yeah.
So we'll get a true sense of what the state of their financials are. But also the CEO has used this opportunity to talk about the broader investment climate.
Yeah.
And the mining charter is sure to be one of those. Mm. Investors are very worried that when Gwede Mantashe came in replacing Mosabenzi Zwane in February, that there was a lot of hope that we'd get this mining charter, they'd be really investment friendly. Mm. Cyril Ramaphosa had spoken about needing new investment in mining and making things good again. And then we saw the draft charter that came out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't what people were expecting. I think it's a lot more of a balancing act, tying into what Lukanya was saying about coming up for elections, the need to balance different constituencies. Mm. And the argument is that they're almost putting their constituency or ideology ahead of common business pragmatism, I suppose. Yeah. And there's that disappointment that the industry hasn't really been heard.
Yeah. Patrick, you spoke about the steps that Ramaphosa have taken. And I think it's 6 months plus minus as president, getting, I guess, in the SOEs, making all those changes and so on as positives. Like the mining charter, as Alan says, now is kind of been a wobbly. The NPA decision, how does that give him more impetus to do the right things in a climate where we are, this very uncertain climate we live in?
Well, to start with, I mean, in the first instance, the NPA decision, you know, once again, the courts have come to the rescue here. You know, obviously, we'd been looking to Cyril to sort of take some sort of steps, and obviously, he was waiting for this court process. Mm. I mean, Cyril himself is a architect of much of the constitution. And one must imagine that it's working pretty much as he'd envisaged it working. And obviously in all of this that we speak about, the constitutional court and the integrity of the judges and the justice system, I mean, that's a, you know, that is a big, that's a big plus for South Africa. Mm. And, you know, that sort of keeps our flag flying a bit there. But obviously, Sean Abrams has been an embarrassment to the NPA, to the whole justice system for quite some time. He was seen to be taking decisions that favored former President Jacob Zuma. You know, obviously, for the NPA, in terms of rebuilding, rebuilding the public trust, regaining the public trust, that's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know, already there's... you know, the opposition, if you like, and some of the analysts are complaining about the choice of the acting the acting man, but one presumes he's going to sort of do as well as he can. But really, we're hoping that, you know, that we get a solid NPA man in there, or woman, and that he or she, you know, does the right thing by the public. And, you know, I think for Cyril that, that looks very good.
Yeah.
It looks very good. You know, not that it's all about making Cyril look better and whatever, but in terms of the sort of cleanup after the excesses of state capture, and this is, I think, a really positive move. And once again, I think the court's just come out absolutely shining here.
Lukanyu, I mean, you were in the UK and watching South Africa from afar for the past decade or so. And I mean, this narrative of a captured South Africa by nefarious means, this change in our top prosecutor, what opportunity does that allow for the, for us to change the narrative, you know, in this, in the context of where we are now?
I think, like as Patrick was saying, I mean, I think this is about, as you're saying too, Ron, it's about changing the narrative. You know, obviously, like, with this is all not happening in isolation. I mean, like, next week we have the Judge Zondo's commission on state capture coming up, and obviously there is resumption of the SARS one, which was actually forgotten about it for a while. So I mean, these are all part of the things that Cyril said he wanted to achieve when he first took office, you know, to try and clean up these institutions, that which are key institutions of state that the public needs to have confidence in. I mean, you'd argue, like, I mean, SARS, you probably argue, is the most important of all institutions of state. I mean, this is the one that I don't know, that raises the money that pays for our education, health, or that's supposed to anyway. So, I mean, I think if it does those, and it'll go a long way. And I think, I mean, to think the guy has only been in office for 6 months, it's actually, like, maybe we've been a bit harsh on him. When you look, now and you list all the things that he needs to do, and you think, oh, he's only been around for 6 months, and we're saying he's failed there, he's failed there. Maybe we should cut him some slack. I don't know.
Stephen, the investor sentiment around South Africa, is it changing? Is it, people are still on the fence? I mean, I think last year they were clearly on the one on the fence.
It was clear. I think if there was somewhere we could shorten the public protector's term, the present one, I think that would make a difference. I mean, I think that is a frustration. And I think, maybe for what should have been the right reasons, you know, it's an entrenched term. It's not somebody who can be fired. And maybe, thank goodness, because if Thuli Madonsela had gone, that would have been very disastrous.
Do you think that, I mean, our new chief prosecutor should be pretty much put in the same protection that Thuli Madonsela had? In terms of, I mean, the thing, all our chief prosecutors haven't, not a single one has finished their term, I think. Has anyone finished their term? And it's all on the whims of a president. Should we also look at this particular institution of putting it in the same space where whoever's there has a good, a solid 7-year term and can't be touched by the president? Is this perhaps a solution to our governance and our corruption crisis? Is it? I don't know.
That sounds like an interesting idea. I mean, I must say, I'm not an expert in this. I'm not even sure what the Constitution says. Do we have to have another, like, amendment of the Constitution? Then we'd have, like, two running on. And who knows, in 8 years' time, we'll still be debating the actual wording of the amendment, and nothing will actually ever be done.
So
I say that totally from, as a lay person, I actually got no idea whether or not that's even explicitly, like, mentioned in the Constitution. I don't know if anybody knows.
No, the chief prosecutor is basically, it's the president's hire, and you'll take whoever he chooses.
Well,
I mean, within reason.
Yeah. One remembers the speech that well, sort of sank Dikga Mosaneke's career. You know, wherein he raised, I think I'm right in saying it was Mosaneke, and he raised these issues that on several fronts, the president simply has too much power. And of course, one is tempted to say, well, of course, this is where the legislature must come in. You know, if you look in systems that seem to work in the United States, for example, they have very strong committees on finance, on foreign affairs, and you know, they can call people, they can hold hearings, etc. And that's really what we'd want.
Yeah.
You know, and if we could somehow get to a situation where we have a revitalized legislature, then it you know, it opens up the field for much more meaningful public representative stroke public involvement in the choice of so for example, if we had a situation where the NPA head could be called in certain circumstances to Parliament and given a sort of thorough grilling and calling to down, account, that would be wonderful. But are we really at that stage? One wonders whether it'll just open it up to more political machinations.
I was actually not trying to say something positive, if I may. I was thinking, actually, as you were talking about the judiciary, I was thinking, like, aren't we glad, though, that we're not in the U.S.? Now, we know the highest court of the land there, everybody's appointed by the president, and they all have, like, political views. And so every case, whether it's abortion, whether it's, like, about whether companies can contribute to politics, you always know the result because you know the ideological stance of the judges.
And you can't move them, right? You can't,
and they're appointed for life.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I mean, at least, like, in this case, we do know, like, when a constitutional court has a ruling, it's actually the sense of drama. We actually don't know which way they're going to go. It's not like, Ron is an ANC guy, so he's going to vote that way.
Yeah. This is true.
I wonder how much these guys at the NPA earn compared to what they could learn in the private sector, as it were, and as advocates. I mean, are we getting fairly mediocre people for that reason? I mean, either mediocre or people who are passionate about public service, like maybe Karen Elwes was in the latter category. But I don't know.
What's another question altogether within the NPA? But speaking of, we've sat here and we've spoken about the state of the economy and state of our politics, which is a bit worrying. But of the past week, Stephen, we have you here. Financial news coming out of the room. Is the sector, this is the one sector of the SA economy that has grown over the past decade, financial services, retail, and so on. This has been the one good news story. What is this still the case around now, of financial services part of the South African economy?
Well, credit extension year to date, and there's a thing called the BA 900s, which are, so we've got very accurate information on that. It's only up about 4%. So both the ABSA and the Nedbank results, they were up in single digits, 2%, 3% in earnings. The bad debts are still pretty manageable. I mean, they don't seem to be a problem. But it's partly, I guess, because they're not really
lending
enough. And with this uncertainty now about land and so on, which is a whole debate on its own, you know, that there are going to be certain sectors of agriculture and so on that where there's going to be much less lending, I suspect.
Tomorrow there's Standard Bank results. I mean, the whole turnaround of the Big Blue, is that still ongoing? Is it a bank that's, you know?
From what I hear, the core banking system, which they spent 20 billion rand or something ridiculous on, is now in place. That was costing them a lot, and so their returns on equity are going to improve. I think they will do somewhat better than the 2-3%. But I mean, 7 would be a good result for them. But you'll know not long after we're broadcast. So,
okay. A little shot of me trying to get something positive going on in the SA economy. But guys, as all. The year's coming. The year's drawing to an end. The uncertainty around the South African story is still there. Where do we get out of this muck? I mean, week in, week out, we come to the show and we talk about the problems. We highlight the issues within the SA economy. Are there any green shoots? Like, where do you guys see any positive turn in the SA economy and the SA story, particularly?
Well, look, we've got the mining charter. Sorry to hop on about it, but we've got that coming out October, November, according to Gwede Montash. So let's see. He's had a lot of feedback from the industry, and let's see how much pragmatism will come out in that document.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad document.
Yeah.
let's see. I think it's going to be workable. I think it's going to work.
Patrick?
So there's one
positive. There's one positive. Yeah. Patrick?
Well, I mean, here's a real shot in the dark.
Yeah.
Land reform.
Yeah.
Let's say land reform is done properly, sensibly. I mean, that could be a massive boost to our economy. You know, we're all looking at, you know, where how's this economy going to take off?
Yeah.
I think the land is one area that, if it's done properly, if we can get a situation where people are uplifted, where they're given some sort of chance to accumulate the wealth that they hadn't been able to accumulate over the, you know, literally decades or centuries, I think that could be a positive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's something we need to be, the politicians need to be very careful about.
Yeah.
But it's a big opportunity for the country.
Unfortunately, no, like our friends from the financial mail are not here. I was going to tease them. This is all about, you know, people, where people are going, the new brain drain. I wanted to just to say, like, as a positive, I'm here, so I'm back.
Take. Maybe you can take that as a reverse indicator, but I don't know.
Maybe time will tell me. I'm still quite hopeful that it will prove to have been a wise rather than a very stupid sentimental reason.
I got something from a sort of small business venture capital awards, and I was actually very impressed with how much sort of energy there is in the small business sector, and how people are harnessing the internet in particular. Mm. So no, all is not lost in that respect. I think I think a lot of people are embracing the well, I don't know if you still call it the new economy, but technology. In small places. I mean, you're not going to find an Amazon coming out of here.
Thanks for that, Stephen. Well, there's a positive note to end this week's programming. We'll see you next week.